Welcome to Intergalactic Relations, a University of Sussex podcast. On this season's podcast, we explore the liberal utopianism of Star Trek: The Next Generation. From the profound optimism of early seasons, mirroring the optimism at the end of the Cold War, to the pessimism that creeps into the show a few years later, as the inhuman results of shock therapy in the former Soviet Union and US misadventure in Somalia showed the limits of that post-Cold War order. We hope you'll learn a little about Star Trek and a little about international relations. Hi everyone, I am Dr. Faiz Sheikh, lecturer in international relations at the University of Sussex. With me is Dr. Dan Watson, consultant researcher on civil wars and peace building. Hi Dan.
Well, hello.
And Dr. Sarah Bulmer, senior lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Exeter. Hi Sarah.
Hi Faiz.
So this is episode zero, where we are going to tell you a little bit about Star Trek, tell you a little bit about international relations, and hopefully make things easier as you follow us through our discussions of Star Trek. So why Star Trek? First of all, it is a fascinating bit of media, especially the earlier episodes, earlier series, especially the one we're going to discuss, The Next Generation, which began in 1987, finished in 93 or 94, something like this. And it is a show that is very much premised on humanity that has resolved all its problems. And it's living in a utopia.
Essentially post-scarcity and sort of post-money, it seems.
Exactly. Sarah, I think you called it luxury communism in our first episode that we recorded. It's underpinned by liberal humanist ideas of rights and the self and individual freedoms. And they're sort of like a benign empire. They operate much in the way empires on Earth have done historically, wanting to spread civilization to other peoples and cultures, only they do it without force. They simply go and show an example of themselves. Look how great this utopia is. Wouldn't you like to be a part of it? Well, guess what? You only have to sort of adapt and integrate these ideals into your own societies. So in this utopia, in the show, we follow a ship of explorers. The ship is called the Enterprise, and the crew on board are our primary cast of characters that will follow through every episode. And we're going to do a quick breakdown of who they are here, as reference points for you. And following that, we'll talk about international relations and maybe how the two might intersect. First off, then, is Captain Picard. He is bald and sexy. He's bald.
No,
and
he's definitely sexy. He's definitely sexy.
Very much so. He's played by Patrick Stewart, who you may well know from very many other things. His second in command is Riker. The next most important character is probably Data. Data is an android, an artificial being. After him is Dr. Crusher, who is a doctor. And then Wesley is Wesley Crusher is Dr. Crusher's son, and he is a child who is somehow on board and pilots the ship sometimes when he's not in school. Next is Troy. Troy is a counselor and also a Beta Z, which in the world of the show means she can... she's half Beta Z, which means she can read people's emotions. Worf is the head of security, eventually. And he is a Klingon. That, in the world of the show, means he's part of a warrior race who values honor above all things. Next is Geordi. Geordi is the ship's engineer. He is the go-to technical guy. And he is blind, which is a very fascinating sort of thing to talk about when we get to episodes involving Geordi and the way in which they deal with disabilities on the show. And lastly, not exactly on the bridge crew, but a character that comes up often, is Guinan. Guinan is played by Whoopi Goldberg, and she is the bartender of the ship, but a confidant of the Captain Picard, and very much a sort of moral center for the show. That's a quick rundown of who's who, so you don't get lost. Who's your favorite character, Sarah?
It's got to be Picard, hasn't it? I mean, it's got to be Picard. He's the Renaissance man. He's a diplomat. He's a Shakespearean actor, isn't he, Patrick Stewart? And he carries all that gravitas into the role. And he's also has all these quirks and foibles. Like sometimes he's a fanatic and sometimes he's more reflective. I think he's a character with a lot of depth. I like him.
Wonderful. He's French?
Yes.
But played by an Englishman. It's interesting.
He does sing Frère Jacques and stuff. There are like the odd sort of Francophone references, aren't there, scattered throughout the show.
Dan, how about you?
Oh, it's hard. Either Data or Geordi LaForge. I think that they're kind of chalk and cheese. What's the ones from The Lion King? Like
Timon and Pumbaa.
That's the one, yeah. a bit joined at the hip. Data, for me, is just... He's a bit like Mr. Spock. He's sort of like a little bit kind of... sort of detached from the crew, but unlike Spock, Spock seems content with his place. Data's like, no, I must integrate with the crew. And the thing I like about Geordi, I think, is like... He really wants to find a girlfriend, like, and he will go to sometimes quite
creepy lengths. I mean, he's a creepy guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah, sort of the original incel. Like he's.
Yeah. Anyone who thinks that there's any virtue in AI needs to watch the episode where Geordi.
Yeah, and Leah Brahms.
Oh God, he ends up having some kind of weird relationship with a computer, and it is not cool.
Yeah, and it's a computer of a real person who then finds out that he's done that. I mean, it's like horrendous. It's totally horrendous. The gender relations in the show are pretty horrendous.
Yeah. As are, I think, what we might call the race relations of the show. Because my favorite character is Worf. And although the human characters are depicted in this post-racial utopia, Worf stands in as the Klingon, as the cultural other to humanity. And he's treated really badly. He's constantly shot down. They ask him for his opinion, but his opinion is barbaric. It belongs to this aggressive warrior race, and therefore it's always the wrong thing to do. So they always ask him what to do. He'll ask him for advice. He'll give advice, good advice most of the time, like, we should raise our shields. They're going to attack us. And they're like, no, we're not, because that would be aggressive, Worf. We're going to do something else instead. Then some crew members die, and then eventually Worf has to go in and sort of arm wrestle somebody to save the day. It's very interesting, and we'll get to him, I'm sure.
He's a very essentialized character because he's almost fetishized, and Picard really loves Klingon culture and thinks that it's immutable and unchangeable. And he loves to like get involved, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, this resonances with the British Empire's sort of obsession with the martial races and things like this. Yes. It's all there, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. And there are two characters who I forgot to mention earlier who appear in certain seasons of the show, Tasha Yar in season 1 and season 2, and Dr. Pulaski in season 2 only, who are name-dropped every now and again. You might hear us reference them, but they're not really core to any of the episodes that we're going to be discussing. Tasha Yar was head of security on the ship, but the actress didn't want to continue with the show, and so her character was killed off. And there was a season where the actress, Gates McFadden, who plays Dr. Crusher, was unsure if she was going to continue with the show, and Dr. Pulaski came in as a replacement doctor, and then Gates McFadden came back, and we never saw Pulaski again. That's them. Let's move on now to talk a little bit about international relations. For those who are new to the discipline, it's through the lens of IR, which stands for International Relations, that we're going to be analyzing these episodes. And I'm going to draw here from recent work by Pinar Bilgin, her 2024 book with Smith, Thinking Globally About World Politics. She talks about IR as having at least three different origin stories. The first is probably the most standard one that you'll find in textbooks, which says IR was founded in Aberystwyth after World War I. It's sort of a noble effort to understand and prevent war. You've got another one another definition of IR or origin of IR that sees it as explicitly and implicitly concerned with race and the supremacy of a civilized or white people as more and more colonies were gaining independence. So that origin story says it was happening around the same time, sort of after World War I and during World War II, but its interest was not peace and war, but really race relations. And for more on that, you can look at work by Bob Vitalis. And the third of many origin stories says that IR actually begins after World War II as a discipline explicitly linked to the study and furtherance of US national interests. And that sees IR famously described as an American social science. For me, it's about the study of world politics and interconnectedness. So even when IR focuses on, for example, US hegemony or the rise of China, it's never a study of US politics or Chinese politics, but rather IR's distinctiveness comes to how those two entities, for example, relate to other international actors and to the systems and structures in which they operate. Essentially, IR tries to explain the environment in which states operate, and indeed, me saying states is probably doing a disservice, certainly more than states, any sort of international political actor. Yeah, I think that's what I'd say IR is. What do you think?
I find it such a tricky one to like pin down, because like IR has like its own different like sub-disciplines, like international political economy or foreign policy, security studies, and itself it draws from like various different other established disciplines, sociology, philosophy, political science, economics. So it's kind of sandwiched in between these different sort of meta-disciplines and sub-disciplines.
I mean, I prefer to think of it as world making. It's about how we make worlds, who makes those worlds, and whose image are those worlds, and then how on the basis of that we behave in them. You know, shaped by power, which can be material, which can be discursive, which can be emotional, which can be all manner of things. And so the one thing we haven't talked about much is gender, but as a feminist, that's totally central to how I think about the working of the world and international relations.
Fantastic, yeah. One of the advantages of using IR to study Star Trek is, just as Star Trek is so diverse, as we've talked about briefly in our discussion of characters, IR can accommodate all that.
And also using Star Trek to think about IR as a form of imagining worlds of the future.
And yeah, I look forward to chatting with you two about the episodes we've chosen. Speaking of, you can find the list of episodes in the show notes for this brief episode zero. And the first episode will be season 2, episode 9. We will see you at episode 1. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Sarah. Bye, Dan.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Intergalactic Relations. This podcast is made possible by the International Relations Department of the University of Sussex. Please subscribe to keep up with the latest episodes.